Welcome to The World We Deserve, the officially unofficial podcast for True Detective on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 2, Night Country Part 2. Aaron, my head is spinning from all the details that were dropped in this episode. Just like,
yeah,
so much. They're making connections everywhere. Connections to old cases, connection to cases that they don't even know about, but we do. It's wild. What do you think of this episode?
This is a six-season episode, or six-episode season,
yeah,
right?
We got to move quick.
Because it does. It feels like it's barreling down the tracks in a good way. Like, it feels like there's no fat on these bones. I liked it, man. It feels a lot like True Detective. This episode especially, like, takes us back to season one in terms of, like, yeah, like the opposite but equal feel. You know, with the women leading the problematic women leading the cases, and the weird just artifacts that are in the world. This Clark guy is, you know, a one man spiral factory, and how it connects back to the old case, and how that's the actual tongue from what, 5-6 years ago, and
yeah,
and also I shit my pants, like, for real, when that guy started screaming after they broke his arm off, because I was like, I wasn't expecting some Seven shit.
This,
you know,
this guy's alive.
So I debated with myself, because we're going into the credits, and I'm like, okay, I got time to debate this. Am I pissed that this guy's still alive after that? Like, Hefner's body's partially frozen. I'm like, you know what? If you ask me, can a human being survive jumping out of an airplane at 25,000 feet, I'd be like, absolutely not. 0% chance. And yet I know, like a French or Russian stewardess got blown out of a 727 at 24,000 feet, fell, and landed in a field and fucking survived.
No,
like,
thank
that's
you.
Happened. That's documented. That's happened.
No, I land on my head in that scenario. I just go face first. No thanks.
I don't think she was, like, picking her spot. She wasn't like, you know, I don't know, maybe she was.
She should have been. She should have been, because that's no life to live after that. All right.
But
she can't
fly
anywhere.
But I feel like, but I feel.
She's got no job anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You failed your one job. You can't jump out of the airplane. No. I feel like.
Anyway.
What joke are you trying to sell?
Who's going to get back in an airplane after that?
Oh, well, you know. If you don't want to fly in an air, or if you don't want to jump, if you don't want to fall off an airplane, just don't get them. So I guess, yeah,
exactly.
That tracks. My point is, like, this reminds me a lot of the debates in The Leftovers, where it's like,
this is not
what I would expect as a result, but it's also within the realm of, I think, the 0.0001% of human survivability. And it's like, you know, that's the story. The million times it happens and no one survives, you don't tell a story about that. You don't have a multi-million dollar True Detective season about that. This is about the weird shit that happened. So it didn't bother me. True. How about you?
Well, so several things were going through my head. I was like, okay, is this guy alive? A. B, is this guy maybe, I don't know, inhabited by the ghost of Travis? Who knows, right? Is this supernatural shit? That was B. C, is this like gas buildup exiting a corpse's lungs and somehow
you're speaking my language now, Jim. Yeah,
like scientifically creating some weird noises coming out of a corpse, but it didn't feel like that either. It felt
like he was shit, his whole head was and wait, they said that he's alive.
He is.
And
he's in
a
medical hospital right
now. Okay.
He's in a medically induced coma. He only had to have one leg amputated, so I don't know. Most of him was
well, they
in
already
ice.
Did the arm, so, you know.
right.
Yeah, I would think, like, if that's the only thing they have to amputate, I have no idea how his penis survived. I feel like that'd be the first thing to freeze off. Maybe that's such a vital organ, your body just pumps all the blood to it and keeps it. But
closer to your core.
Yeah.
If
all you lose is an arm and a leg in that circumstance, I think you would count yourself lucky. But I actually think he's gonna be fucked up. He's gonna have no eyelids, no nose, no ears. That shit's gone. No fingers, no toes.
I mean, that sounds right. I don't know why he would be spared any of that stuff.
I think he's gonna, like, when we next see him, he's gonna be, like, really traumatically altered, I think, but I don't know, maybe. Ugh. Maybe I'm...
That sounds
I feel like
true
that's
detective.
Also... Like Issa Lopez seems like she's really leaning into the freaky, deaky shit. But mm-hmm. I also think that Team Skeptic is still fighting. Like, I'm starting to see a storyline where a grief-stricken loner, already isolated, kind of neglected and ignored by his peers, just completely has a break with reality and goes
forces
on
them
a,
all outside.
Yeah,
gets
like
naked,
gets,
folds
gets
their
a
clothes.
Weapon or yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and like just but yeah, I don't know if that can explain the true look of terror that these guys have, like the active fight. I don't know. Maybe the polar bear's involved. What? Have we talked about what you think about this episode? And
oh, no, I was so interested in talking details, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, I like this episode. Here's the complaint I know everybody's going to have. Oh, this is one big exposition dump. So, you know, one big info dump for an hour. And it's kind of that. But look, man, it's a detective case. To solve the case, you have to work through the details, and you do that by talking about it and thinking about it, you know? It's hard to show the details of an investigation happening, like, of not an investigation, but like a forensic accounting of a situation, right? It's hard to, like, show that.
I mean, I love that shit. Like, JFK the movie is like 90% bullshit exposition, but it's fascinating. I love that stuff. So
yeah, I know that's gonna be the big complaint, but honestly, it didn't bother me either. Yeah, I mean,
like,
I saw that in the first episode, and I didn't think that about the first episode at all. This time, I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
I mean, if people don't want to watch police work, I don't know why they're watching True Detective. But
sure.
It's a lot of investigation and looking
Russ
at stuff
Cole
and
did
reading
this shit.
Stuff. And,
it was just, yeah. It was just like, he had a lot more psychosphere coming out of him. You know, Danvers is much more down to earth.
If you're joining us live for the instant take and instant talk, we will be getting to your guys' comments, your guys and gals' comments here in momentarily when Jim and I run out of bullet points to talk about. So yeah, fill the chat with any kind of questions, observations, references, whatever, and we will we'll harvest it. I will say that we're down our producer tonight. She's got some time off, so well, Jim and I are going at 33% less powerful
mm-hmm.
than normally.
34. Yeah,
Tal definitely carries pulls more weight than we do.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so just letting everybody know about that.
But yeah, generally, I really liked it. I'm way into this case. I want to know what happened. And all the weird True Detective-y shit, right? The spirals, the hair dolls or whatever that they're making, uh-huh. the weird Carcosa shit. I want to know about all of that. How does this connect back? Because there's some interesting stuff that they get into that's not just like Carcosa imagery, but names that come up mm-hmm. and like all kinds of stuff. Issa Lopez was not kidding when she said this is going to be fairly connected to season one.
And yeah. And I was actually surprised to see some of the stuff that's like connected there. And also the other thing before, I guess we get into the nitty gritty, the thing that's fascinating to me is because I'm taking her at her word. There must, even if ultimately you decide that there's not, that there's a supernatural explanation or a supernatural thing behind this. Like, I think Issa Lopez is promising a plausible, rational explanation. And as the details of this case and the disposition of the bodies and like start rolling in, I'm like, what is going to be? You know, it's like Jodie Foster says, like the kid, Peter says, this doesn't make any damn sense. She's like, sure it does. We're just not asking the right questions. Mm-hmm. That promises me that there's going to be a way to look at this from a police woman's perspective and be like, yes, this actually made sense. The folded clothes, and I'm excited for that. Do you want to jump right into the season one True Detective connection? Everyone's going to be
yeah, for sure.
Tuttling about.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Thank you.
Okay, so you want me to do it? Tuttle. apparently is... I had forgotten this about season one, but Tuttle is the name of the people who were involved, or I guess the family that was involved in the cult stuff going on in season one. the king in yellow guy, right? The lawnmower man. He was a Tuttle, yes?
Yeah. All the Tuttles mm-hmm. are the ones that started the kind of trafficking, weird Lovecraftian sex cult. And the governor, I think it was the governor, maybe it was a state senator.
Yeah,
was a Tuttle that was kind of covering for them at a high level.
And in this episode, one of the names of the companies connected to the Salal Research Station that was funding it, Peter says, is Tuttle United. And they do kind of everything.
Yeah. And then would we... Harry Potter's aunt, I forget her name.
Rose, yeah.
Rose. What's her lover, the dead lover?
Travis.
Isaac? Kevin. Travis.
Yeah. Travis is the husband, yeah.
The ladies here in Innes do seem to get around.
They do. Like,
Danvers, yeah, well, we'll get there. We'll get mm-hmm. there. We'll get there. What was that? Where was I going for the what were we talking about?
We were talking about the connections to season one, and you were talking about Rose.
Oh, did they mention Russ Cole? Did he mention his last name as Cole this episode?
Oh, shit. They might have.
That's the thing. It's like people, I saw some rumblings in chat, and I'm like, did they actually confirm that?
I think they said Travis Cole. Yeah.
I think they might have, too.
Okay, so chat's confirming, yes.
And I'll get to it, because this is an interesting question. Like, how many connections to season one True Detective before it feels like there's too many?
I don't think they can do too many as long as the story is good. I like season one. I wouldn't have a problem if it
turns out the remnants of the Tuttle clan that got ran out of Louisiana and Scandal came to Alaska like everyone else that wants to start a new illicit life and keep up their trafficking and shit and start preying on a minority population, like, that would make a lot of sense. And in that case, infinite connections to season one would be acceptable. So I'm not... I mean, I get where it's like it can be a little Star Wars-y, where it's like, oh, it turns out Yoda, you know, Darth Vader built C-3PO and Yoda hung out with Chewbacca, smoked Wookiee weed. They go way back, you know. Like, I don't know.
Does it risk demystifying the first season too much? Because it's one of the things that stuck with me is that it wasn't... Like, yeah, the case was pretty much solved in, like, a way that you could wrap your head around, but also it felt very weird and mysterious, too. Too many connections to the first season and too plain of a reading of stuff kind of risk that, losing that feeling?
Yeah, and maybe you could even say that, like, is it not taking the problem seriously to attribute all the missing, like, women and violence against women to just, like, some kind of weird arcane cult, and it's just like, oh, if we could just find the Satan-worshipping goat fuckers, we'd be all right in a society. It feels like it's letting society off the hook a bit. But that would be the stupidest way to do it, right? If it's just literally the Tuttle clan that fled from hot Louisiana to cold Alaska.
She says that symbol's
there's clever ways old, you could do it.
Older than the ice, maybe. And I don't know what that means, really.
Yeah, that there's some kind of nexus here. This Axis Mundi. This is the navel of the world.
There are other connections too, obviously. I mean, I mentioned them a little bit, but like that whole trailer scene is just filled with the stuff you think of from season one, right? These weird doll things, the animal bones, the spirals on the walls. Yeah, the crazy drawing stuff. It's all there.
When you saw that kind of looking, like the mummified looking body, did you think that actually might be her body? That he like dug it up or something?
No, I didn't think that. I thought it might be somebody else's body, like a more recent victim. But then I saw all the pictures and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's...
Yeah, I thought it might be a body too, but when I kind of rewound and looked at it, and it's like, it kind of looks like a straw baby, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Straw man, straw boy. What was that in the U8 or the Weird Al Yankovic movie? A Hey Boy? You gotta make a. Do you remember that part where.
I don't like remember a lot of that movie, but yeah.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
There's like
I remember him going full Rambo, but that's about it.
What do we think of the Talal station? The Salal station? why would the, like they point out how odd this is of an Arctic research station where it's like the same personnel, it never gets relieved. Mm-hmm. It's just the same eight guys that have been there for what, 5+ years? The one sandwich guy, I don't even think he looks old. I think he was like 13 5 years ago.
He ages gracefully up there in the cold, you know.
And they're trying to find a way to stop cellular decay. Like there's a bunch of plausible things they're trying to do.
This guy looks so young.
There you go. He was their first successful experiment.
Yeah, he's eaten a Tuttle sandwich. I don't know. It could have connections to Tuttle, right? Like, does this cult fund this place and do these weird sort of, I guess, protocols?
My God. They're trying to make the Yellow King be reborn or something.
Maybe.
I did notice that they talked about the tongue, who they confirmed with Anna Kay's from her genetic testing or whatever, that the tongue had some kind of cellular anomalies.
Oh.
So do you think it's possible that they were experimenting on this woman and that her being killed by mining activists was just a convenient scapegoat? How the hell would that possibly happen?
Yeah. People wouldn't know about that. I didn't get the impression that she was taken and hidden, you know, in perhaps a basement dungeon for a long time. I got the impression that she was like out and about and then murdered next day.
And that this guy just really is in love with her. And it's this sent him on a literal spiral. No pun intended.
Could be. I don't know. That's what's intriguing me about it. I'm not putting all the pieces together yet, which is good, because a lot of these shows you can kind of piece it together before. And I don't think there's a great explanation for everything out there either. The water stuff is like halfway there, it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably got something to do with it, but now you bring Tuttle into it, and I think there's more. There's definitely more. It's not just a case of mines poisoning the water.
You're listening to The World We Deserve. We'll be right back. Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're back with more of The World We Deserve.
I think of everything we found out about the scientists themselves. There's six of them, which means that presumably is the seventh guy who's alive at the hospital, and then the Anna Kay's boyfriend.
Clark.
Yeah. They had ruptured eardrums.
Mm-hmm.
At least one of the guys had scorched out eyeballs, which reminds me of the whole polar bear situation. One of them had a spiral drawn on their head, or carved on their head, or tattooed on their head.
Yeah, and another thing I noticed this episode, they I love the face ID stuff that they do. I it's good to know that even when I'm a corpse-sickle, my face ID will work and the cops can get my shit.
Do you think that's plausible that a phone would recognize your frostbitten corpse as...
Really? It just barely. It's on the border. It's like, you know, that guy surviving.
With the black nose and ears and, yeah. If it was just discoloration.
It's all about the T-zone, man. If you got a nose and you got the right separation between your eyes, it'll identify you. The thing about that is they open this guy's phone. He's making his sandwich. You see Clark go, she's awake. And then the phone cuts out in... The video stops and it does like a sort of EM interference thing, a lot like we saw with Navarro's car previously she heard she's awake. There's something other. That's not water. That's not bad water making that happen, right? Something else is cutting off phones. Like if there's some EM surge or... And I don't know where it would be coming from other than... the station itself. Maybe Tuttle's got some kind of experimentation they're doing with electromagnetism up there. And maybe the poles are reversing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Teeth marks on the corpse.
Right.
As if they were biting each other themselves. That's interesting.
Human, I presume. Like they would have said if it was animal.
It looked, and you saw him, it definitely looked like a human bite pattern. Okay. It didn't look like a canine.
I didn't catch a glimpse of him this time, but
right. Maybe it is a Yeti. You know, they presumably have human-like teeth.
Yes.
And the interesting, I thought it was also interesting how, even though every time we've seen this station depicted, that's pretty tight-knit. You know, they're dancing, having a good time. That the delivery guy mentioned, or was it the cleaning ladies? I can't remember. Someone gave testimony that this Clark guy had been acting weird and kind of isolating himself from the group, and the other group had kind of like started freezing him out.
Yeah, which, and he was walking around naked in the facility, talking to himself.
Yeah. Which is a weird response to have when you're living isolated with eight dudes. One of them just starts losing his mind. You're like, let's freeze him out, see what happens. I think that's team rationality, is that this guy had like some kind of psychotic break and just terrorized these guys somehow.
Yeah.
Sabotaged the base, made them flee.
Possible.
What do we make about what is Danvers? What hold does she have over Peter? Does he just really want to be? He just really wants to be a superstar cop. Because is she a superstar cop?
I don't know.
She clearly is very talented, but how the hell would he even know if she's a superstar cop? She's been the cop of Ennis, Alaska, for. Mm-hmm. His entire professional knowledge. It's like I don't understand the hold he's got when he's got his young wife and child at home begging for attention, and she's just like, you don't got plans, I just gave you your plans, fuck off. And he's like, yes sir, like What?
Yeah, he should get out the regulation book that says, oh, my shift ends at 6 p.m. and yeah, I'm not on call anywhere. Yeah, like she does to Connolly. I don't know what the hold is there. I don't know if it's respect. I don't know if it's some sense of guilt or owing her something, maybe. Yeah. Maybe she gave him the job when she came up there. I really don't know.
I still think Hank and her had a sexual relationship, because I've yet to see evidence that she doesn't have a sexual relationship with anyone remotely in her age bracket. So, and true. That would explain it, like, yeah, if there was some kind of like stepmom type situation. And it also tracks mm-hmm. with her comments about his domestication last episode. By the way, Hank, poor Hank.
Don't be so quick to say poor Hank. Hank's a piece of shit. I can see it. I mean, look,
okay,
at him.
You're
slaps
right.
His kid.
You're right. If anyone deserves to be scammed by a Russian bride, yes. But this is he is getting scammed. When he's texting yes. her, he is actually texting a low level Eastern European gangster.
Totally.
Who's just draining his bank account.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
I bet next episode she has some kind of debacle at the immigration office, and mm-hmm. she'll need like $5,000 to get her passport situation resolved.
Mm-hmm. Fast track.
And then the storm will hit and the plane will be canceled, and she's gonna have to emergency rearrange her travel and another couple. Because he's got a little money left to help with his money. Like, as soon as this account's zero, it's I don't know.
He's kinda getting scammed.
He's not a great guy, but mm-hmm. He's definitely getting fucked here. And not the way he's hoping.
Yeah. No, I'm so eager to see where that goes. Whether she gets here and just hates him because he sucks, or whether he's getting scammed and he's just, they're draining his wallet to the very last penny. I want to see how he reacts.
So Danvers seems like she's fucking a path of misery through Ennis. She's just ruining mm-hmm. these men's lives left, right, and center. Pretty yikes about how she dealt with her daughter's flirtation with a tribal tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's an acceptable reaction to that. That seems like something that's going to really alienate your I'm not sure exact nature. Mm-hmm. Adopted daughter, quasi-adopted daughter. But
yeah, if not completely legally adopted, then certainly adopted in spirit.
Because it did seem like her father and her definitely had a solid, like, actual live-in relationship. And I wonder if when she started, like, and look, there's nothing wrong with sleeping around, okay? But I wonder if she started, if that's when she started kind of, like, her sleeping around phase is when that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see that trauma turning into that. It's a way to soothe the pain, sure.
But how did she lose her son?
Probably a car accident. He got high and killed them both. Yeah, that's how it happened. Obviously, he likes to smoke weed, right?
I was thinking, like, do you think that she lost two of her loved ones through two separate drunk driving accidents, or were they connected? Did she have, like, in addition to her older daughter, she's the stepmom to, did her and her husband actually have a child together?
It's very confusing.
Yeah, you know, for a second, I thought Harry Potter's aunt was fucking a dead guy. I was, like, lost in a flashback. I'm like, oh, my God, she had got a little Beverly Crusher. Some ghost action.
So maybe her adopted daughter's father was, like, Jake or something. I think his name was Jake. Was driving Holden, her son, around and got into an accident that killed them both, but they weren't married, and they weren't, like, Holden is a son from another man who was already out of the picture. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, he definitely is he's definitely, you know, I think they're suggesting that, I mean, I don't know if it's that kid's, the guy we're talking, you say his name is Jake.
I think I remember. I'm not sure.
Jay definitely seemed like he's indigenous, and that child definitely seemed indigenous. So it's like, I'm guessing
for sure
that,
is.
Yeah, if she had that with another man, then he was an indigenous person too. I'm just assuming that, like, yeah, maybe it was like a blended family, and That would explain a lot.
Possibly.
I still don't understand why Hank thinks he can keep these fucking records. Like, when he came and punched Peter out, I was like, I just couldn't believe it. My mouth hanging open. Like, what in the hell?
Well, he didn't punch him because he wants the records back. He punched him because he stole from family, right? This is the guy who thinks family is family is family. And it trumps everything. Like,
I will suggest that to steal something, you have to have ownership of it. So we're talking about fucking case files that belong to the police department. Am I insane?
No, you're 100% right about, like, you know, 9/10 of the law. But, like, but this is a guy who is offended that his son would come into his house and lie to him and take something that, even if it doesn't belong to him, that is in his house, right? I mean, he's feeling betrayal by his son.
Yes, true. But I think it's more of like what he took. I don't think he would give a shit if he came in there and took like his baseball bat from his room or
you
something.
You might be right.
You know? I think it's more of like this is something that he was using as power. Because Hank undermines Danvers every fucking chance he gets. Like even... You know, she's trying to take this crime scene serious, and he's like, let him blow off some steam. Let him take some pictures with the victims. Let's put that on Instagram. God. Who gives a fuck?
Let him stick the dicks in the corpse mouth. Why not?
Yeah, it's good fun. Boys will be boys. Come on, Danvers.
That scene, man, that killed me. These guys are idiots. These chuckle fucks.
I don't know why she puts up with it. Other than
she kind of doesn't, but, you know, does she.
Why is this guy serving on her force? Like Navarro,
I don't know. I don't know. Get rid of him. He's a joke. Maybe because Eccleston keeps him around, right? Connolly. Because Connolly is still apparently in charge in this department. I thought Danvers
was. He's the chief of the much bigger town of Anchorage.
Oh, and he just came up here?
He came up because, rumor they're going
to hotel and
yeah, they were going to dump this case to Anchorage, and she kind of changed her mind at the last minute, and said no, we want to keep it. So he was there to take it over, and she's like, I changed my mind. And
okay, so she's head of the department, but she still answers to him, obviously.
Yeah, and she fucked him 19 years ago, which is definitely before Leah's time.
Yeah, they say. I forget who says this. I think it's him that she was with Jake before she was with him, or at the same time she was with him.
Yeah. Okay. So even with Jake, the one that seemed like she's super happy with, she's just juggling dudes.
I think that guy's Jake. I hope I'm not mistaking the Jakes here. Maybe there are two Jakes. Do we have a two Jake theory going?
Because I was trying to get the idea of like if she was with Leah's dad and she kind of like that was the one she had settled down, or if she was kind of like. If she's doing a McNulty in from The Wire where she's just like a Rolling Stone, man.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Seems like it, kind of.
Yeah, they referenced the big fall. So the big falling out apparently with Danvers and Navarro was the Wheeler thing.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about that than the name? Did that and chat, please let us know if that rings a bell other than establishing a thing that broke them up. But apparently it wasn't just the Anna Kay thing. There was something else that was the thing that actually got Navarro thrown off the force.
I will say, I do think there's some kind of cover up going on here. Obviously. I mean, there was a girl murdered and nobody knows who did it, but like between Connolly saying, we should just kick this case to Anchorage and I'm doing it because I don't want this to turn into a shit bowl or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is Taco Bell's dollar menu now. But also Hank, like you said, he's sabotaging her at every turn. He feels like there's something going on there. And then the guy from the mine is lying to her face, but also just says his excuse is, I don't like you, so I didn't tell you about it. But he knew about this trailer. How much did he know about this trailer? Did he know what was in it?
Good question. I don't think so. Like, it seems to me like he just literally, I sold this guy a truck or a trailer and I had no idea what he did with it, but
everybody who's connected to this stuff seems dead. Like Annie died. Yeah. Clark, well, I don't think Clark's dead at this point, but the cousin of this minor dude who sold the trailer to this other person is dead.
Yeah. Oh, but another question I had is, like, you know, Navarro was driving down the road. She starts jamming out the Spice Girls. Did she hit something that was in the middle of the road? Was it like a caribou, or is it potentially something a little bit more concerning than that?
It looked like it was I didn't rewind to like pause or anything because we were doing this, but it looked to me like it was substantial and bloody. And I
thought so too.
I could see that being roadkill. I could also because
they you know mentioned that last episode. So that's the thing. That's the thing that happens up there. It's things she does
for sure. I could also see it being a bit of scientist. I could see it being somebody else, maybe even that we haven't seen yet.
The crazy thing is, like, I would expect it was going to be a thing that the episode would have indicated that. Like, as she drives away, you would have seen, like, some kind of weird lump on the side of the road. And, how would that ever come back in to play?
Well, the cross falls out near it. I don't know.
Right.
If she'll maybe go back for that at some point and discover.
Oh, my God. There's no way she goes back for that necklace and finds it, right?
Probably can't find it, but she might find the body.
Forget about the Fargo bag of cash. Yeah. Like finding that necklace in fucking Alaska
after
the middle of winter,
the next snowfall, right?
Or even the wind blows for 30 minutes. Like, yeah, true, you're never finding that. But that's her. That they heavily imply that's her mom's necklace. That both her and her sister are terrified that her sister will become. I got that her mom looks like she has had like a complete psychotic break, but also a little bit of like maybe she's seeing ghosts and demons.
Yeah, she's pointing at things, but we don't know if she's pointing at one of them or pointing at something they can't see.
But her sister's seeing things too, so there's, but I mean, it's just, I think at this point, just giving us kind of like the stakes for what's going on with her sister.
It's the thing, she says, oh, I'm not like mom, and I'm like, okay, but what if you are?
Yeah.
Because you really seem like mom right now.
She seems stable this episode. But that's that's how that stuff works, right?
Sure.
I'm trying to think if there's anything. They also had something that, man, there's so much stuff that I'd like to get into. Like, they talked about how the ice coring thing, there's like no that can't work. Like the biologist at school saying like that's because like the drill destroys the genetic material. Like they're on a fool's errand,
or like the permafrost does. Is that connected to Annie's tongue being?
I don't know.
Messed up.
Because when I hear permafrost and I see like it's one of the big of all the apocalyptic things that can kill us with global climate change. One of the things. Science has suggested that if, like, the permafrost that hasn't been thawed for, you know, some of these places for perhaps tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years, what kind of, like, diseases and pathogens and whatnot, organisms that we don't have any defense could be in there if it starts thawing out. I wonder if she is suggesting that they are looking for something that's impossible, but they could still unleash something. Like, they're finding the cure for life, but instead they drill and find that's impossible. They can't find the fountain of life isn't down there, but perhaps Pandora's box is.
It's like what Danvers is doing here. She's drilling for the answers to the case, which are unknowable and can't be had, but she could open a big can of worms.
And it's interesting that the unrest in town. Like, how much of this is the water going bad? How much of this is the darkness? How much of it is connected? But things really seem to coming to head between the people to support the mine, largely the workers and the people that own the mine, and everybody else is drinking the poison water. Okay, well, do we have anything else we want to talk about, or should we get to the instant talk portion of the podcast?
Yeah, let's get into it.
The Instant Talk portion, of course, is exclusive for our club members. Club members can watch us record this live and also participate in Instant Talk portion of the podcast and get the Instant Talk portion of the podcast. All you got to do to sign up is go to support.baldmove.com, get ad-free feeds, tons of other extra content like the Instant Talk, Instant Take podcasts. And that's enough advertising. Now it's time for me to scroll all the way to the top of chat and try to catch up. That tub jump scare was A+. Oh yes, there was a lot of good jump scares. I thought the only one that got me is the guy screaming at the beginning.
Yeah, I saw the image coming, but
yeah, Navarro made Kavik shit his bath probably, and poor Peter.
It's not the only Lee got him liquids floating in that bath.
Lee got him pretty good too.
Jerking it in the bathtub? That's a terrible idea. Okay, we'll talk about it on Tuesday.
I mean, you know, silicone lube, it's waterproof, right? You can make that happen.
No, that's fine. Like, you can get the job done. I'm worried about the aftermath. I don't stew it in your own juices.
Oh, yeah? Egg drop soup, you're not you're not into that.
God. This is why you pay for the club. This is it right here.
This is why you cancel the club.